Law 12. Questions and Answers. This page has taken me many months to put together and contains lots of questions and answers that I, the webmaster, hope will help you understand and interpret the laws of associated football. A. Questions about Law 12. B. Queries about my interpretation of Law 12. C. Your own interpretation of the questions are posed below. Happy whistling to you all from the webmaster. Question 1. How is a referee supposed to decide what is a foul under the auspices of Law 12 and what is not a foul? He would have to be a mind reader to know the intentions going through a player's mind before he makes each tackle, and whether a tackle was done deliberately or not. Answer 1. The word intention was deleted from the laws in 1996/1997. It was thought inappropriate since the introduction of the terms careless and reckless into the laws in 1995/1996. The use of the words careless and reckless in Law 12 were included to allow referees to interpret situations easier. But some referees had problems with specific incidents involving deliberate acts that were not initially considered dangerous, but could have been considered reckless or careless. For example, when a player commits a scissors kick when there are no other players near, but then a swiftly advancing opponent very nearly gets kicked in the head. Weather conditions may also produce a dangerous situation where a player is neither careless nor reckless. Law 12 now includes the terms careless, reckless, or using excessive force when players commit an offense. Apart from acts of simulation and handball, the word intention is no longer used in the laws to gauge whether a foul is a foul or not. In other words, referees no longer ask to consider intention. It is either a foul or it is not a foul. Law 12 fouls and misconduct offenses are mostly committed by a player against an opponent whilst the ball is in play and normally committed on the field of play. Although there are one or two situations that can occur off the field of play, such as when the ball remains in play very near the touchline. But a player is fouled when he has traveled just outside the touchline following a misjudged follow-through tackle which takes both players outside of the touchline, where illegal contact is then initially made. Deliberate handball is the only exception that is not committed against a particular opponent, but against the opposing team. The word deliberate, in the sense of deliberately committing a foul, also no longer features in the wording of Law 12. It is impossible for a referee to judge whether a player commits a foul deliberately or whether a player intentionally sets out to kick, charge, push, trip, hold, or impeded an opponent. The new wording, careless, reckless, or using excessive force, makes it much easier for a referee to make a judgment based upon what the player actually does, and not whether it was done deliberately or intentionally. The referee can then make his decision based upon the player's action, and not upon what the referee thinks was in the player's mind. Question 2. If whilst the ball remains in play inside the penalty area, and when a defender and an attacker both travel over the goal line near the ball and out of the field of play, the defender holds the attacker back beyond the goal line to prevent him from re-entering the field of play, should the referee award a penalty kick to the attacking team? Answer 2. No, the referee should stop play and caution the defender for unsporting behavior. The correct restart is a dropped ball at the place where the ball was located when the referee stopped play. A penalty kick can only be awarded when a defender commits a penal offense inside the penalty area. In this instance, the defender committed the offense off the field of play, therefore, a penalty kick cannot be awarded. Question 3. If whilst the ball is still in play, a defender standing inside his own penalty area strikes the referee, what action should the referee take? Answer 3. The referee should stop play and send the defender off for violent conduct. Play should be restarted with an indirect free kick to the attacking team, to be taken from the place where the defender committed the violent offense against the referee. Question 4. An attacker shoots the ball towards goal. Just as the ball is about to enter the goal, a defending fullback standing in his own goal area and holding his shin guard uses the shin guard to prevent the ball from entering the goal. What action should the referee take? Answer 4. The referee should award a penalty kick to the attacking team. The shin guard is regarded as an extension of the defender's hand. The defender should be sent off for preventing a goal being scored. If in the above situation, a goal is subsequently scored after the ball hits the shin guard, the defender should be cautioned for deliberate handball and not sent off. If in the above situation, the goalkeeper is the one who uses his shin guard to prevent the ball entering the goal, the shin guard is again regarded as an extension of the goalkeeper's hand, albeit an illegal extension. The correct restart here is to award an indirect free kick to the attacking team. The indirect free kick should be taken from the place where the infringement occurred. If it occurred inside the goal area, then the free kick should be taken from that part of the goal area line that runs parallel to the goal line, at the point nearest to where the infringement occurred. The goalkeeper should be cautioned for unsporting behavior. Question 5. What action should the referee take when a defender taking a goal kick kicks the ball outside of his penalty area to his goalkeeper, who is just outside the penalty area? The goalkeeper then dribbles the ball back inside the penalty area and picks it up. Answer 5. In this instance, the goalkeeper has touched the ball with his hands after it has been deliberately kicked to him by a teammate. It does not matter whether a colleague has deliberately kicked the ball to the goalkeeper during a goal kick or an open play. This is still an infringement of Law 12. The correct restart is an indirect free kick to the attacking team, to be taken at the spot where the goalkeeper touched the ball with his hands inside the penalty area. A direct free kick should be awarded if the goalkeeper picks the ball up outside of his penalty area. Question 6. Whilst the ball is still in play, what action should the referee take? If a direct free kick offense is committed by a defender on an attacker, right on top of the defender's own penalty area line, should the referee award a direct free kick or a penalty? Answer 6. The lines on the field of play are part of the boundaries that they encompass. The referee should therefore award a penalty kick to the attacking team. If an offense is committed on top of any line, it is deemed to be committed inside the area that the line surrounds. Similarly, an offense committed on the touch line or goal line is committed in the field of play. A throw-in comes into play as soon as the ball is thrown back over, on, or along the touch line. An offense committed on the goal area line is committed inside the goal area. If an opponent is standing on the center circle line before a place kick has taken place, then he is deemed to be standing inside the center circle and should move outside of it before the place kick can be legally taken. A player standing on top of the penalty arc line should move outside of it before a penalty can be legally taken. A ball placed on top of the corner flag quadrant circle is deemed to be inside the quadrant area. The only line where some confusion exists is the halfway line. The halfway line is the boundary for both halves of the field of play, and it can be argued that an attacker standing on top of the halfway line is deemed to be standing either inside his opponent's half or standing inside his own half. As the benefit of any doubt is now given to the attacker during offside decisions, an attacker standing directly on top of the halfway line should not be penalized when referees make offside decisions. The same philosophy can be adopted for players standing on the halfway line when they take a place kick at the start of the match and following a goal scored against them. Law 8 states that before a place kick can be taken, all players must be standing inside their own half. Standing on the halfway line during a place kick should be deemed to be standing in your own half. Most players and referees allow this anyway. Question 7. Just exactly what is dangerous play? Answer 7. Committing dangerous play is not by itself an offense. For example, completing a scissors kick when no other player is near. A dangerous act becomes dangerous when, in the opinion of the referee, the action A is dangerous to an opponent, B the action was committed with an opponent very close by, and B the dangerous nature of the action caused the opponent to falter in his play and was thus unfairly disadvantaged. The key is that dangerous in the laws refers to the potential for danger. The direct free kick fouls include actually delivering, or attempting to deliver, contact of some sort. Dangerous play recognizes the potential danger to an opponent, and the award of an indirect free kick is a way of causing the opponent to modify his/her play to maintain safety. Thanks to Carl Arps for the above excellent paragraph description of dangerous play. Players would not normally be cautioned for dangerous play unless the dangerous play is the culmination of a number of other persistent fouls committed by the same player. However, if a player continues to play in an uncontrolled and dangerous manner, the referee may caution him for unsporting behavior. The referee should stop play when a dangerous act adversely affects the progress of an opponent, who will normally cease challenging for the ball in order to avoid receiving or causing injury as a direct result of the other player's dangerous action. Because fouls, dangerous play, may only be committed only against opponents playing in a manner considered to be dangerous when only a teammate is nearby is not actually a foul. Contact is not necessary for dangerous play to be penalized. On the contrary, if contact does occur during a dangerous play situation, the referee can penalize the more serious foul of kicking, stuts, up, tripping, illegal charging, etc. An indirect free kick is awarded when a player plays in a dangerous manner. Dangerous play by defenders in their own penalty area against an opponent is penalized by an indirect free kick and not a penalty. The referee is the sole judge as to exactly what constitutes dangerous play. Football is a contact sport, and the laws allow players to compete without danger to them, so long as they respect the letter and the spirit of the laws. The referee judges the question of danger as it happens, and the question of danger rests entirely on his opinion. Goalkeepers are very often exposed to dangerous challenges and kicks. Referees will normally attempt to provide the goalkeeper with special protection against such challenges, and are more likely to penalize an attacker for dangerous play when the collision involves the goalkeeper. This is an accepted modern part of the game that has without doubt prevented many very serious injuries to goalkeepers. The following are examples of what may constitute dangerous play. A. Tackling with one foot lifted from the ground. This action is not always considered dangerous. Players very often use the sole of their foot as an effective means of controlling a ball passed to them. If the referee feels that a player has raised his foot and this action endangers an opponent, then the referee should stop play immediately and award an indirect free kick against that player. If a player contesting for the ball purposefully goes over the top of the ball with his foot and makes contact with an opponent's leg, this is serious play, direct free kick, and not dangerous play, indirect free kick. European referees are very particular about penalizing players for tackling with one high foot. Referees in England are less particular and will only penalize players if there is a definite danger to opponents. The most common instance when the referee will penalize players for dangerous play is when a player lifts his foot very high in the air in an attempt to kick the ball which is very near an opponent's face. Players are normally receptive to this type of protection from the referee. Players kicking the ball with their foot going above their waist are not by itself dangerous. It is only dangerous if there is another player who almost gets kicked in the face or body when the ball is kicked in such a manner. B. Tackling with 2 feet together. A two-footed tackle made from a short distance away does not always pose a danger to an opponent because the ball itself acts as a natural cushion between the players. When the two-footed tackle is made from some distance in an uncontrolled manner, when attempting to make contact with the ball or not, certainly entails a large element of danger to the opponent. Such tackles are reckless and will certainly incur the wrath of the opposing team if they are allowed to go unpunished. Two-footed tackles should be penalized with the award of a direct free kick or penalty kick. This is more of a jumping penal offense, as opposed to the less serious offense of dangerous play. C. Tackling by sliding. With the advent of the Law 12 change in season 1998/1999, where a tackle from behind which endangers the safety of an opponent must be sanctioned as serious foul play, the use of the slide tackle has lessened dramatically. A slide tackle carried out with one or both legs outstretched can be allowed, but not if committed from behind. A player making a slide tackle from some distance can be construed as being dangerous, and if contact is made with an opponent, then there is a large element of danger to the opponent. A player making a slide tackle from some distance knows that if he misses the ball, he may bring down his opponent. If he does bring down his opponent, then this is a tripping offense, direct free kick, and not dangerous play, indirect free kick. Slide tackles can be allowed if made from the side and contact is made cleanly with the ball and not the player. An indirect free kick should be awarded when a slide tackle is made from some distance and the tackler makes no contact with the ball or the player, but his action constitutes a potential danger to the opponent. Opponents are very adept at riding tackles, jumping over sliding tackles. This does not mean that the referee should ignore such tackles. The referee can allow advantage when sliding tackles do not contact or affect the flow of play for the opposing team. Of course, the referee should have a strong word or caution the perpetrator at the next convenient moment. A player committing a sliding tackle with the sole purpose of inflicting damage on an opponent, even if he makes contact with the ball first, can be construed as serious foul play and punished by a sending off, depending on the severity of the tackle. I have seen many occasions when players who are looking for retribution make violent sliding tackles against opponents in the hope that the referee will allow such action as part of the game itself. Be aware of players exacting this punishment on opponents. Serious foul play is serious foul play, so do not be duped into thinking that such action can be masked by players attempting revenge within the laws of the game. Because it does not exist and is not allowed. A referee who allows such action to go unpunished will quickly lose control of a match. Players will very quickly realize that they can make serious fouls without worrying about being punished by the weak referee. Note, tripping does not necessarily have to be instigated by the use of a foot. Tripping or attempting to trip an opponent includes situations where a player uses his body to unbalance or upend an opponent. Referees must carefully distinguish between the act of accidentally tripping from that of being deliberately tripped by an opponent. Deliberate tripping or attempting to trip is an offense if it is clearly directed at an opponent and causes the opponent to falter or fall. Players may trip over themselves or accidentally fall over an opponent as a result of natural play, and in these instances, no infringement of the law has been committed. D. Tackling from behind. A tackle from behind is not inherently illegal. Before the 1998 World Cup in America, Law 12 was changed for season 1998/1999 to state that a tackle from behind which endangers the safety of an opponent must be sanctioned as serious foul play. During the 1998 World Cup, almost every player committing a tackle from behind was sent off, irrespective of the severity or execution of each tackle. Referees are now more likely to only send off when such tackles are done recklessly or using excessive force. Tackles from behind are carried out through a player's legs, or through a player's legs, or around a player's legs. The referee is the sole judge as to whether a tackle from behind is illegal or not. If the ball is played without the player touching an opponent's legs first, this can be allowed so long as the tackle is not deemed by the referee to be dangerous. For example, if two opponents are standing very close together, there is nothing to stop one of the players tapping the ball away whilst standing immediately behind his opponent, who has the ball just in front of him. For a tackle from behind to be illegal, the tackling player normally either makes contact with the player before he makes contact with the ball, or the tackle endangered, or potentially endangered, the safety of the player being tackled. Making contact with the opponent after touching the ball while performing a tackle does not necessarily mean that a foul has not been committed. All tackles from behind made from distance should be penalized with the award of a direct free kick or penalty kick if committed by a defender in his own penalty area. An illegal tackle from behind includes when the tackling player makes contact with the ball first and then strongly follows through with his second foot slash leg, thus upending and potentially injuring his opponent. It is also perfectly possible during a tackle made from behind to make contact with the ball first and then follow up with a foul that can break a player's leg. The fact that a player makes contact with the ball first does not make a tackle from behind legal. On the contrary, players who loudly plead this case inevitably feel guilty and are trying to sway the referee's judgment on the severity and legality of the tackle. Players illegally tackling from behind should always be cautioned at the very least, and red carded if done in a way that is reckless or using excessive force or endangers the safety of the player being tackled. E. The scissors kick. The very best goals ever scored emanate from execution of this very difficult and exciting maneuver. Players attempting a scissors kick can put an opponent's head at risk. The scissors kick is normally done within the penalty area, where there are likely to be other players in the near vicinity of the kicker. A scissors kick entails the kicker lifting his feet very high in the air to project the ball backward from the direction he is facing. A scissors kick is not an offense in itself. It is only dangerous when the kicker's feet come into close proximity with another player's face when the kick is being executed. The referee, according to the situation in which the scissors kick is being performed, must judge the danger. If there are no other players near, then the scissors kicker should not be penalized, as he has not committed dangerous act. F. Dangerous play against the goalkeeper. When a goalkeeper has gained possession of the ball in his hands, opponents should not attempt to challenge him or block his momentum as he attempts to release the ball back into play. It can be most annoying when players try to block the goalkeeper's path by moving to and fro in front of him, or by lifting a foot in front of the goalkeeper whilst he is attempting to punt the ball upfield. An indirect free kick should be awarded to the goalkeeper if an opponent infringes him upon in this manner. Law 12 states that an indirect free kick is to be awarded if an opponent prevents the goalkeeper from releasing the ball from his hands. Another form of dangerous play is when the ball is fired towards the goalkeeper and an attacker dangerously challenges the goalkeeper or attempts to kick the ball powerfully when the goalkeeper has dived along the floor and gained possession of the ball with his hands. These incidents can be very dangerous for the goalkeeper. G. Dangerous play by the goalkeeper. Goalkeepers have a nasty habit when an attacker is approaching nearby of purposefully raising one of their boots when coming out to catch a high ball. This is supposed to be a warning by the goalkeeper to the attacking player not to come too near again when challenging for the ball. This is a dangerous act by the goalkeeper and should be punished by an indirect free kick to the attacking team. Nevertheless, this infringement is very rarely given against the goalkeeper. The referee should at the very least have a strong word with the goalkeeper at the next suitable opportunity to warn him about using such dangerous foot-raising tactics when an opponent is close by. If the goalkeeper commits this act again after being warned by the referee, then the referee has no option but to caution the goalkeeper for dangerous play and award an indirect free kick to the attacking team. If all referees stamped down on such behavior, then it would not happen. Goalkeepers would soon get the message. Question 8. If a goalkeeper who has had possession of the ball in his hands for 6 seconds is just about to punt the ball off the field when an attacker runs in front of the goalkeeper and prevents release of the ball, shouldn't the referee penalize the goalkeeper for holding onto the ball for too long and award an indirect free kick to the attacking team? Answer 8. Certainly not. The attacking player committed the offense. Law 12 states that an indirect free kick is to be awarded if an opponent prevents the goalkeeper from releasing the ball from his hands. The goalkeeper should not be penalized for being prevented in releasing the ball by an infringement committed on him by an opponent. The goalkeeper has the right to release the ball without being obstructed by an opposing player. Question 9. If a player commits a sending off or a cautionable offense during the halftime period, what action should the referee take? Answer 9. The halftime interval is considered to be part of the game time itself. If a player commits a sending off offense, he should be sent from the field of play. The player being sent off is not allowed to be replaced, i.e. the team will start the second half consisting of 10 players. If a player commits a cautionable offense, such as dissent, during the halftime interval, that player should be cautioned, as if the incident occurred during any other time in the game. The referee should show the red and yellow card respectively when dealing with misconduct during the halftime interval. Question 10. If whilst the ball is still in play, a goalkeeper standing inside his own penalty area forcefully and purposefully throws his fist into the face of an opponent who is standing just outside of the goalkeeper's penalty area, what action should the referee take? Answer 10. The referee should send off the goalkeeper for violent conduct. Play should be restarted with a direct free kick to the opponent's side, to be taken from the place where the offense occurred, i.e., where the fist struck or would have struck the opponent. When a player strikes an opponent with the use of any part of his body, fist, head, leg, boot, elbow, etc., the restart should also be taken from the place where the strike lands and not from the place where the strike was made from. For example, if a goalkeeper or any other player standing just inside his own penalty area strikes an opponent who is standing outside of the penalty area, the restart is a direct free kick to the opponent's team to be taken from outside of the penalty area and not a penalty kick. The point of impact is important in judging where a punch-throwing incident took place. This illustrates the principle of penalizing where the contact actually happens and not where it was initiated. For example, if a goalkeeper is standing in his penalty area or on the line, leans out to catch the ball outside the penalty area, he commits an offense, which can be penalized with a direct free kick. If he was standing outside and reached in the area to catch the ball, there would be no offense. B. If a defender slid into a tackle and made contact with an opponent before the ball, he would be penalized. And the game restarted from the point where the contact was made, not where the player began the sliding tackle. Question 11. While the ball is in play, a player standing inside his own penalty area throws an object at an opponent standing outside the penalty area. What action does the referee take? Answer 11. He stops play and sends off the player who threw the object for violent conduct. Play is restarted by a direct free kick to the opponent's team taken from the place where the offense occurred, i.e., where the object struck or would have struck the opponent. FIFA Cite Law 12. Question 18. Question 12. Whilst the ball was still in play, a defending player standing inside his own penalty area spits at an opponent who is positioned outside of the penalty area. What action should the referee take? Answer 12. The guilty player must be dismissed and shown the red card and a penalty kick awarded to the attacking team, as the offense was initiated from within the penalty area. The case of spitting at an opponent is the offense. The punishment for spitting applies to where it was carried out and does not depend on it landing on an opponent. Question 13. What action should the referee take against a substitute who throws an object, e.g. a shoe, at a player of the opposing team who is on the field of play and is at that moment playing the ball? Answer 13. The referee shall stop the game, send the substitute off and resume the game by dropping the ball at the place it was when play was stopped. Unless it was within the goal area at that time, in which case it shall be dropped on that part of the goal area line which runs parallel to the goalie in at the point nearest to where the ball was when play was stopped. He must report this incident to the responsible authorities. The substitute will not be allowed to take part in the match. FIFA. Question 14. If following an argument between teammates, one of the players decides that he has had enough and permanently leaves the field play claiming that he is injured and cannot continue, when this is obviously not the case, is there anything that the referee can do? Answer 14. In such an instance as this, the referee cannot make a judgment as to whether a player is injured or not. If the player says he cannot continue because of an injury, then the referee has no option but to allow that player to leave the field of play without being penalized. Although simulating action, faking, or exaggerating an injury can be construed as a cautionable offense, Decision 6 Law 12 Fouls and Misconduct, the referee is not advised to take disciplinary action against this supposed outgoing injured player. The letter of the law should caution a player who enters or leaves the field of play without the referee's permission cautioned. However, in this case it would not be in keeping with the spirit of the game. Just let the player leave and get on with the game. Question 15. Is there any situation where an opponent is denied an obvious goal-scoring opportunity when the perpetrator is not sent off? For example, what action should the referee take if the 11th team player arrives late after the game has commenced and then enters the field of play without notifying the referee? At the precise moment that this 11th player enters the field of play in his own penalty area, an opponent kicks the ball in the direction of the empty goal. The 11th player then manages to stop the ball with his foot just before it travels over the goal line and denies his opponents an obvious goal. Answer 15. Law 12 clearly states that a player should be sent off if he denies an obvious goal-scoring opportunity to an opponent moving towards the player's own goal by an offense punishable by a free kick or a penalty kick. In this instance, the opponent who kicked the ball towards the goal had not been interfered with in any way, so it would be very difficult to justify sending off the oncoming 11th player for deflecting the ball away from the goal. I believe that the wording punishable by a free kick or a penalty kick applies only to those fouls and misconduct listed under Law 12, direct and indirect free kick infringements. For example, kicking, tripping, pushing, impedance, handling, etc. In this instance, the 11th player did not commit any of these offenses. Coming onto the field of play without the referee's permission is punishable by a caution and the award of an indirect free kick to the opposition, Law 3, to be from the place where the ball was when the referee stopped play. It could therefore be argued that as the offense of coming onto the field of play is punishable by the award of an indirect free kick, then if the words punishable by a free kick or a penalty kick are taken literally, the 11th player could be justifiably sent off. The laws are not clear as to which action by the referee is the correct action. I believe Law 18 common sense dictates that the 11th player should be cautioned. And the match restarted with an indirect free kick to the opposing team. Other dubious, preventing an obvious, or not so obvious, goal scoring opportunity. Instances for your consideration are: A. When a goalkeeper who has released the ball at his feet purposefully picks it up again to prevent an oncoming nearby challenging attacker gaining possession and shooting towards goal. Should the referee send off the goalkeeper for denying a goal scoring opportunity and restart with an indirect free kick? Or should the referee just give the goalkeeper a caution and restart with an indirect free kick for touching the ball a second time after it has been released? B. When a goalkeeper receiving the ball direct from a throw-in taken by a teammate has to dive and palm the ball away from entering the goal, and thus prevents an oncoming nearby attacker from making contact with the ball and shooting towards goal. Should the referee send off the goalkeeper for denying a goal-scoring opportunity and restart with an indirect free kick? Or should the referee just give the goalkeeper a caution and restart with an indirect free kick for touching the ball after it has been received directly from a throw-in taken by a teammate? I suppose it could be argued that had the throw-in entered the goal directly without touching any other player, then a corner kick would be awarded. But, on the other hand, Law 12 clearly states that an indirect free kick is to be awarded if the goalkeeper touches the ball with his hands after he has received it direct from a teammate. So an offense punishable by a free kick or a penalty kick had been committed and had prevented an opponent from an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. Send off or just an indirect free kick? Question 16. Just exactly what parts of the body is a player allowed to use to legally pass the ball back to his own goalkeeper before the goalkeeper is penalized for subsequently touching the ball? Answer 16. This is commonly known as the back pass law. Law 12 states that a goalkeeper is penalized with the award of an indirect free kick against him if, inside his own penalty area, he touches the ball with his hands after it has been deliberately kicked to him by a teammate. Kicked means if the ball was deliberately passed to his goalkeeper by a teammate using any part of his foot or shin. The goalkeeper should not be penalized if he touches the ball after it has been passed to him by a teammate using any other part of his body, for example, knee, thigh, chest, head, or shoulder. And in these instances, the referee should allow play to continue. For a goalkeeper to be penalized during a back pass, the ball must be played by a teammate's foot or shin. It must be played back deliberately by that teammate, and the goalkeeper must touch the ball with his hands. Note that the direction that the ball travels is immaterial. A back pass means that the ball is deliberately passed back to the goalkeeper, and not that the ball must travel in a backward direction to the goalkeeper. In some instances, a defender attempting to kick a ball away from his penalty area will inadvertently deflect the ball towards his goalkeeper. In such cases, the goalkeeper may use his hands if the ball comes to him, because the defender did not deliberately kick the ball back to the goalkeeper. The referee is the sole judge as to whether a back pass is deliberate or not. Referees are advised to be 100% certain before penalizing for a back pass. If a teammate seeks to circumvent the spirit of the back pass law by purposefully flicking the ball up in the air and subsequently heading the ball back to his goalkeeper, then if the goalkeeper touches the ball with his hands, the goalkeeper should still be penalized, even though the teammate last touched the ball with his head. In this instance, circumventing the spirit of the back pass law should not be allowed, and an indirect free kick to the opposing team should always be awarded. The same goes if a teammate taking a goal kick kicks the ball outside of the penalty area to his goalkeeper, who subsequently dribbles the ball back inside of his penalty area and then picks it up. In this instance, the goalkeeper is still guilty of touching the ball with his hands after it has been deliberately kicked to him by a teammate. It does not matter whether a colleague during a goal kick or during open play has deliberately kicked the ball to the goalkeeper. This is still an infringement of Law 12. The correct restart is an indirect free kick to the attacking team. A direct free kick should be awarded if the goalkeeper picks the ball up outside of his penalty area. Question 17. If a goalkeeper who has caught the ball by cradling it in his arms accidentally drops the ball out of his arms and onto the floor, is the goalkeeper allowed to pick the ball up again without being penalized? Answer 17. Law 12 states that the goalkeeper is not allowed to touch the ball again with his hands after it has been released from his possession and has not touched another player. In this case, the referee must decide whether the ball was accidentally dropped or deliberately released by the goalkeeper. If the referee believes that possession of the ball was lost because the goalkeeper had mishandled the shot, then the referee should allow play to continue if the goalkeeper subsequently picks up the ball again. If the referee is unsure whether the goalkeeper dropped the ball deliberately or dropped the ball intentionally, then the referee should allow the goalkeeper the benefit of the doubt and allow play to continue. The goalkeeper should only be penalized if the referee thinks that he purposefully released the ball and then picked it up a second time. Question 18. If a goalkeeper in his own penalty area holds the ball in his hands for more than 6 seconds, what action should the referee take? Answer 18. The referee should stop play and award an indirect free kick to the opposing team at the place where the goalkeeper was standing when the 6-second time limit expired. If the goalkeeper was standing in his goal area, then the free kick should be taken from that part of the goal area line that runs parallel to the goal line, at the point nearest to where the infringement occurred. Question 19. In a recent U14 match, the goalkeeper made a dive for the ball that bounced off the side post. While on the ground, the keeper made an effort to scramble for the ball and reached out for it, maybe touching the side, not the top, of the ball with one hand. The attacker got to the ball at the same time and hit the ball into the net. What, in your opinion, is control of the ball? I am all for protecting the keeper from dangerous challenges, but the referee explained to me that he has possession even if he has a pinky finger or even an elbow contacting the ball. Please help me understand this. Is an attacking player allowed to kick for the ball if the goalkeeper has attempted to dive on the ball but is not yet in control of the ball? Answer 19. Although goalkeepers must be especially protected by referees, an attacking player is allowed to challenge for the ball and may attempt to play the ball as long as it is not in possession of the goalkeeper, providing that, in the opinion of the referee, the challenge on the goalkeeper is not dangerous, reckless, careless, or using excessive force. A goalkeeper is considered to have possession of the ball if he has the ball trapped on the ground with as little much as one finger on the ball. A goalkeeper has possession of the ball and should not be challenged any time that he has a part of his body, hand, fingertip, chest, nose, etc., in contact with the ball. This does not include when the goalkeeper has the ball at his feet, when he is fair game to a challenge by an attacking player. Whether or not the goalkeeper has possession of the ball or not, any significant contact by an attacker on the goalkeeper may be deemed a foul. Any attempt by an attacker to kick the ball whilst it is in possession of the goalkeeper would be a foul. One of the referee's responsibilities is to keep the game safe and to especially protect the vulnerable goalkeepers. However, if a goalkeeper is not actually touching the ball, then the ball becomes fair game for an attacking opponent, so long as the opponent is not guilty of dangerous play. For example, placing his leg and boot near the goalkeeper's face. Possession of the ball means having control of the ball. The referee decides whether a goalkeeper has possession of the ball or not. The easiest way to define this is to understand that possession is not determined by the amount of body mass that the goalkeeper has to use on the ball. In order for it to be in his possession, he can use one finger, two fingers, one hand, two hands, or his whole body to gain possession of the ball. The difficulty that the referee has is in deciding the exact moment when a diving goalkeeper actually has possession of the ball. This can be very difficult to define when both an attacking player and the goalkeeper are stretching for the ball and make contact at virtually the same time. Considering the vulnerability of goalkeepers, referees should err on the side of the goalkeeper when making decisions. When a goalkeeper makes a save with his hands or finger and he does not catch or gain possession of the ball cleanly, he is not deemed to be in possession of the ball, and an attacking player is entitled to make a play for the ball, so long as it is not done dangerously. The goalkeeper is also not in possession of the ball when he fumbles the ball or drops the ball or has it knocked away by an attacking opponent before he has it properly under his control. Possession of the ball by the goalkeeper includes when he has it under control, when bouncing it to the ground, or when releasing the ball into play. There should be no roughing up of a goalkeeper once he gains possession of the ball. The ultimate way of understanding if a goalkeeper can't possess the ball by just using one finger is to imagine the goalkeeper standing upright with the ball at his feet and one of his fingers pressing down on the top of the ball. This is possession, the same as if he was stretched out on the ground with one finger on the top of the ball.